Hello.
Hello. Welcome back
to
Coffee, Wine, and True Crime. That was better.
That was so bad.
I think it was better than last time we recorded.
Maybe.
Well, thanks for holding off and letting us take a week break.
Yeah, things are just crazy.
Oh, if you want to take responsibility for not recording last week, I was going to take responsibility for it.
Oh, I mean, I was just going to blame both of us.
Okay. It was our fault, and we promise, well, we can't promise we won't do it again.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Because Jordan and I have communication issues. It's something we need to work on in our relationship. We're both doing the same state.
Because we both wait to the last minute to make our decisions on things.
Well, I've known for a few days. I just haven't told you because I'm terrible.
Here's what Sarah will do. Sarah will text me during the middle of the week when I'm at work, and she'll be like, what state are you doing? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, it's 99 degrees out. Like, I'm sweating my balls off. Like, I have no clue. Like, just figure out, just let me know what you're doing, like, whatever. But then she won't tell me until I finally decide on, like, Saturday, and we record on Sunday.
Yeah. I told you, communication's an issue in this relationship during COVID. It's something we need to work on. I feel like when I was at school, our communication was a lot better because all we did was text and play 8-ball.
True.
Actually, we didn't even talk. We just played 8-ball.
It was our way of just saying, like, hey, you alive? You good? Yeah.
Yeah.
You alive? You good? Yeah.
Yeah, we play 8-ball every day, all day. For the most part.
All seasons. All seasons. Times of semester, you know.
Different time zones.
Yep, different time zones. That's commitment. That's love.
It really is. I honestly can't remember who went last.
Hold on. I have my phone.
Okay.
We go on our Spotify. Listen to us on Spotify if you don't already.
Oh, yeah. We have... We have some good reviews on Apple, so keep reviewing us.
Oh my God, really? What does it say?
We have 11 ratings.
You went first last week.
Okay, so it's your first time.
It is not my first time.
Your first this time.
You gotta enunciate, bitch.
I know.
Okay.
Mumbling runs in my family. I can't help it.
So do we have good reviews? Do people talk about us explicitly?
Yeah, we have 5-star reviews on 11 ratings.
Oh my God, that's actually a decent amount. Are there any like comments?
Yeah.
What are they?
Awesome show. Two awesome hosts with good banter and good stories. Keep up the good work.
Cute. I thought it was going to be creepy for a second.
No. The hosts are great. The stories are well-researched, and I really enjoy the presentation. If you like true crime, you need to listen to the show.
Facts.
So, you want to hear a cute story?
Yes.
So, one of my sorority sisters, Abby. Hey, Abby. Say hi to Abby.
Hi, Abby.
She texted Brittany, and she's like, my heart sunk a little bit because I opened up, like, to listen to Sarah's podcast last week, but there wasn't a new episode.
People,
no, Abby, we got a good one for you.
Yeah, who knew the state of Georgia could be so wild?
Well, I think at least in my story, I don't know about your story, but we'll see that Georgia can't freaking investigate anything.
True. Yep, that's basically my case.
Minus Atlanta, the police in Atlanta. But yeah, because I don't know about you, but like every time I listen to a podcast, and, like, the cases out of Georgia, like...
It's always shitty, isn't it?
It's always such a shitty investigation, and then, yeah, so... Always got some good ones out of Georgia.
Yes, I agree. I think that Georgia, at least in my case, there is some problematic investigation going on.
Oh, mine too. All right. You want to start then?
Yes, sorry. My hair is on the microphone. Yeah, and I just don't want the sound of my hair to like rub on the microphone. Okay. So this week, I will be talking about the case of Patrice Andres. Now, haven't if anybody, I'm surprised that you haven't.
I know.
The case was recently featured on Netflix's reboot of Unsolved Mysteries. It was episode 2, and it was.
Oh wait, I have. I just watched that show.
All of it?
I've seen like 4 episodes.
Okay, so then you've heard of this. Okay, so the incident occurred on Thursday, April 15th, 2004, at around noon. Patrice Andres, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, was a 38-year-old female who was married to Robert, I believe, Andres?
I think it was Rob, yeah.
Robert, yeah. Or Rob. After dropping off her son, Pistol, at school, who was not, she had him before she had married this Andres guy. So then they lived on her own. And like, this was a hardworking woman. Like, they did not live under like the best conditions when Pistol was really young. But then she like went to beauty school, like worked her butt off, and then ended up opening her own salon, which I think is super cool. So then on that day between 11:30 a.m. and noon, she disappeared from her salon called Tambor's Trim and Tan, located on Matt Highway and Highway 369 in Cumming, Forsyth County, Georgia. She was last seen before 11:30 a.m. and was discovered missing just after noon. So basically, she had appointments that morning, like appointments at her salon, that she saw. Like, she saw the first 2 appointments in the morning. And then later at, so her 2 appointments that were scheduled happened that morning. At 11:37, she acquired a name to schedule an appointment of a shop, of, like, so schedule an appointment. I don't know why I said acquired a name. I think they mean, like, they acquired a phone number so that she could schedule an appointment.
Yeah.
However, at 11:50 a.m., 13 minutes later, the distinct shopper tried to contact her, and the call was unanswered, which is super rare for her. And, like, they knew that she was there 13 minutes ago. So then the big mystery is what happened in those 13 minutes. Around that time, said they saw her car parked unusually. So it was, like, the business building, and then on the side there was like kind of a perfect area between her building and then where the woods started, where she could just like back her truck in every day, or her SUV. But then instead, these people who had known her were driving by, and they saw that her car was parked like in the front, kind of on the side, and then there was another car pulled straight in, so they were like kind of perpendicular, and it looked like they were doing a jump start. And then the witnesses described this person as having shoulder length hair. One person said it was an old woman, another said it was a man. So I'm assuming someone of relatively short stature, depending on the gender. And they were described as seeing like with their hands on each other, but it doesn't, because it was just somebody driving by, they didn't really have enough time to see if it was like super aggressive or not. So then her son is pulled out of class and asked about, you know, the last time he saw his mom, because she was reported missing after the one client didn't find her, because this was a small town and everyone knew her, and everyone knew like she wouldn't run off, like she loves her son, like this is really sketchy.
Yeah, and if I remember from the doc from Unsolved Mysteries, like everyone loved her. She was just like the light, like a very like lighthearted and good person.
Yeah. So after the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office came to her salon, they discovered that the money had been taken from the salon, her lunch was uneaten, and her car keys were there, and her vehicle had been moved from its normal location to the part that we were talking about earlier, but the other car seemingly had left. So then she's missing, and I believe she's missing for, well, over a year for sure.
Yeah.
A little over a year. And then on December 6th, 2005, skeletal remains were located behind a church off Kelly Ridge Road in Dawson County, Georgia. The remains were eventually identified as Patrice Andres. Her wedding ring was never recovered. And the ring consists of two bands soldered together with a Marquise diamond center stone. It is the hope of law enforcement that someone may find this ring or recognize it and lead them to the person responsible. So that's kind of like the brief overview of the case. But then when you get into the nitty-gritty of like suspects and theories, the son Pistol and the husband Rob hate each other. Like, they despise each other.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, like, right after his mother disappeared, like, Rob basically kicked him out of the house, wouldn't even, like, let him go in and get clothes, like, change the locks. It's like, you don't do that to, like, a 15-year-old kid no matter what.
Yeah, and then it was, like, they both kind of said the same thing about each other. Like, Pistol was like, my mom is my mom. Like, I was her only son. She loved me, and he couldn't stand that I got more attention, and she bought me things and stuff, and, like, friends of hers would say, like, he was really controlling of her and didn't want her going out and, like, would try to control every aspect of her life. But then the husband, Rob, will say that Pistol was just mad that, like, his mom was spending time with him as well and that he was totally nice to him, which is super suspicious. So then it ended up coming out that this was not a happy marriage.
Yeah, it was like people said she wanted a divorce and...
Exactly. But... unfortunately, there hasn't been any hard evidence to connect anything other than the remains being found and the wedding ring being missing. There was nothing significant that was found DNA-wise that would lead anyone to believe that anything else happened or that you could bring to a court of law.
Yeah.
So, and there's been a few, like, serial killers that people have thought might have been connected, but it was nothing significant enough to really bring forward. It was kind of just people talking. And then there's, throughout time, there's been people who've come forward with statements and then recanted them. I'm just kind of going through my notes here. Yeah, and unfortunately, there's no, the case is open. Yep. The case stays open. There is no suspects. There have been false confessions, which are from those serial killers. But the biggest person that people suspect is Robert, because he's just super creepy looking, and which doesn't help. But like, and that doesn't mean you're a killer. But like, statements about all the stuff he did right after she died to her son, like, that's not normal. But then to the cameras, he's like, I loved her so much, we were so happy. Like, no. Yeah. That's really suspicious. And part of, like, what you were saying earlier about, like, investigators not doing their job, like, I just feel like they could have looked way more into him earlier and possibly found something, instead of just being like, oh, like, this is weird, like, it must have been somebody else, like, coming through, like, not investigating, like, the closest people to her. They like questioned him and then let him go, and that was kind of it.
It's always the husband.
Exactly. And he was like, I have a bachelor's in criminology, I get it, the husband's always the suspect, like, I'll come down with you. Like, shut up, nobody cares about that, your fucking degree, like, you probably did it.
Yeah, I mean, he just gave me off like weird vibes, and him trying to like justify what he did to the son, and
yeah, so gross, so weird. All right, well, yeah, that was my case. Unsolved, creepy. Maybe something else happened that we don't even know. Maybe it was a completely, totally other idea. I think that's doubtful. Yeah. I think that this is a pretty one of those unsolved cases that are pretty straightforward.
And, like, I think, you know, on the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they said that, like, people just don't rob hair salons because they don't have much cash on them anyways.
No, people do, like, checks and, well, it was 2000. Card. They didn't do Venmo, but, like.
Card.
Yeah, and, card and.
Yeah. Yeah, so it seems like it was just a murder that they robbed just to cover, to try to throw them off.
Yeah, he just, like, stole the money, and then I guess he probably took the wedding ring in hopes of, like, pawning it or just keeping it so that. As like a trophy or something sick like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Jinx.
Oh, we forgot to also ask what we're drinking.
I thought of that right as I started speaking. All right, 1, 2, 3.
You got a Coke. I got a Dunkin' Donut pre-made iced coffee bottle thing that I found in the fridge.
Those are good.
Actually, yeah, this one's, I used to get these, or the double shot, Starbucks double shots, on my way to, when I'd walk to work at 7 in the morning. So we live right next to a gas station, so I just go in and grab one if I didn't have time to make coffee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Right, mine's see. A long one, so I guess it was kind of good. Yours was short.
Because you told me that yours was long, I was also like, all right, let's talk fast and hurry up.
Yeah, I've been working on this one on and off since Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me mad, so I had to keep taking breaks. Let me put it this way. The lack of information, like lack of complete information I couldn't find, kept getting me mad.
Yeah.
All right, so this case was suggested to us and brought to our attention by a Twitter user called Mystery. So let's get into it. So on August 29th.
That name is just Mystery?
Yeah, Mystury.
Oh, okay. So it's not actually like in SpongeBob where he has the seahorse named Mystery?
Yeah, no. SpongeBob was on when I was at the doctor's office the other day, and I was waiting to go into physical therapy, but there was no sound and no subtitles.
Wait. There were no subtitles? That sucks. But
it was an older episode, so I remember watching it.
Oh, true.
So I was I already knew what was going on.
Okay, this is a random thought, but this doesn't have importance because I was just looking at something on my computer. What if we, got to a point where we would have a Patreon?
I would be down to have a Patreon. I subscribe to Morbid's Patreon, and they're really good. It's $3 a month, and I really like them. So Ash and Alina, if you're listening, we'd love to go on with you and do an episode with you guys.
Yeah.
I love them.
I have the TMG podcast, which are Cody Coe and Noel Miller, who are YouTubers with, millions of subscribers.
Yeah, I think it would be cool to do a Patreon because then we can get money for better equipment instead of just using our headphones, mics, and then I don't know, I'd also be down to guest star on other people's episodes or have people on ours.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think of that.
Yeah, let us know.
At us.
Yeah, at us, shoot us an email, you know the drill. We're already...
We'll have all our info at the end, too.
Yeah, we're already talking to, some other podcasts and stuff. So we've been doing promo swaps, so.
Yeah.
All right. So on August 29th, 2009, at 8:15 a.m., Guy Hines Jr. returned home to his trailer in Glynn County, Georgia, which is between Savannah and Jacksonville. It's a port town. That area, it's a port town. So he shared this trailer with 9 other people, and when he walked in, he found his father, Guy Hines Sr., 45, his uncle, Rusty Toller Sr., 44, and Rusty's 4 children, Chrissy Toller, 22, Russell D. Toller Jr., 20, Michael Toller, 19, who had Down syndrome, Michelle Toller, 15, Rusty Toller's sister, Brenda Gail Flanagan, 49, Christy's boyfriend, Joseph West, 30, and Chrissy's son, Byron Jimerson, 3.
Oh.
Don't worry, the baby survived.
Okay, good.
But the rest were beat to death.
Oh, lovely.
So a neighbor called 911 because Guy was hysterical. But he does get on part of the call, which I'll play. As you can tell in that 911 call, he is hysterical.
Yeah,
he's come home, everyone's dead.
Yeah,
and he's hysterical. I mean, imagine walking in and your dad's dead. and your uncle and your cousins.
Yeah.
So, seven were dead on the scene, and one died the next day at the hospital. Like I said before, they were all beaten to death with a blunt weapon, with a blunt object, which investigators and the medical examiner said it was likely a shotgun barrel, which was never found.
Okay.
So a few hours later, Guy was arrested on charges of drug possession, tampering with evidence, and lying to the police. So the drug possession was for a controlled substance and possession of marijuana, which he was a crack addict.
Okay.
So when he was arrested, Glynn County Police Chief Matt Doering said he wasn't calling Guy a suspect in the killings, but he isn't ruling him out.
Okay.
So later he was released, I think like a week later, he was released on $20,000 of bond and put on house arrest. And there's video of him leaving jail, like with his ankle monitor on and everything. And there's like, he's not, there's like no defensive wounds on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was, he didn't look like he was in a fight or anything.
Yeah.
So then on September 4th, 2009, Guy was arrested on 8 counts of first degree murder and 1 count of attempted murder.
With what physical evidence?
I'll get there.
Yeah, right.
So police says the motive was drugs. So he was on crack cocaine on the time of the murders. He admitted that he was on crack that night.
Okay.
So police say that he went to the house to take Michael Toller's prescription painkillers, but got into a fight and then killed the family out of anger. So at the time, they said they had evidence, but they wouldn't release it because it was still an ongoing investigation. And I'll get more into the evidence, like, once I get back down to the trial phase.
Okay.
So many of Guy's family members don't, like, at this point, didn't believe that he did it. His brother, to this day, will maintain that Guy never did it, like, Guy's younger brother. And, like, remember, like, he supposedly killed his father and his uncles.
Yeah.
So Guy's younger brother, Tyler, they have the same dad, said at the funeral for the victims, "I know my brother didn't do this. My brother has a conscience. I can say there was drug involvement in the house, and I think somebody ripped off somebody, and somebody needed to get their money back. Maybe someone in the house double-crossed someone. It could have been my brother who double-crossed somebody, but it could have And it could have been part of his fault that somebody came in there and did this."
Mm-hmm.
Drugs were normal in that house. And according to Guy, Joseph West sold crack.
Okay.
So Guy's grandpa, whose son was Guy Sr., also said about Guy Jr., "He loved his dad. I know in that 911 call that we heard on the news, he was devastated to find his dead like that. I just can't believe it unless they really had some proof."
Yeah.
So other family members also expressed that there was no way only one person did this, with several grown men among the victims. Like, it was like essentially 8 versus 1.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
And even if they were sleeping, getting beat to death is like getting beaten is loud and messy. So it's, I don't know. I just don't see how it's just one person who.
Yeah, it's not like a mass shooting type of thing where someone just went in there with like a mini.
Like a gun. But yeah, it's like, you know, it's 8 versus 1. And even if they were asleep, it's loud. It would have been very loud and someone would have woken up and tried to subdue him. And also remember, he has no defensive wounds.
Which is crazy to believe in a crime that intense and
exactly
gory, I guess.
Yeah. So fast forward to late September 2013, that's when the trial begins, and this is like where we begin to actually hear the evidence against him.
Okay.
So Guy had taken a shotgun from the house, a different one than supposedly everyone is beaten with, because they haven't found that.
Okay.
So he took a shotgun from the house and put it in his car he was using before calling the 911 the mornings of the murders. He says he moved the gun to the car because it was stolen when police, I guess, ran the serial numbers. It was actually registered to someone in the house.
Oh.
Okay. And inside the same car, police found narcotic pain prescription of Michael Toler and Michelle Toler's cell phone with Joseph West's dried blood on it.
Okay.
This one I can't really explain, minus the fact that it's not Guy's car. It was, like, someone else's in the family's car, I think.
Okay.
Police gathered 400 pieces of evidence from the house, but they seemed to miss some of the bigger things, which I'll get into later.
Okay.
So, Guy was wearing a pair of khaki shorts, and underneath those, he was wearing a pair of gray gym shorts. And on those gym shorts, there's the blood of three victims, and there's also victim's blood on the flip-flops he was wearing. But he was allowed to continue to wear those clothes up to 24 hours after the murders. So it's not like the police took his clothes right in for evidence, like had him change and take his clothes right into evidence.
Okay. That's weird.
There's some conflicting evidence about the blood that's on him. A forensic expert that his attorneys used said that the blood was smeared and not splattered, because if it was splattered, it would be from taking a beating someone, because it would splatter onto you. But if it was smeared, it was like you were walking in it or you touched something with the blood on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the blood that was found on him was smeared. And like I said, it was likely from when he went in and found the victims.
Yeah.
So during the trial, it came out that there was some major evidence mishandlings by the police.
Of course.
So none of the bodies were tested for fingerprints.
Oh my God.
You get fingerprint evidence, which I feel like is pretty normal,
mm-hmm.
that they would be tested.
Yeah.
An expert said it would take at least 5 people to carry it out, which would make sense if it's...
If it's 8 people, yeah.
Yeah, 5v8 versus 1v8.
But that's not impossible.
Yeah. So another major thing was, this is the thing that pisses me off, because they could have gotten DNA off of this. There was clothing in the bathroom with blood on it. It was photographed but not taken for testing, and none of the victims were found in the bathroom.
That's so crazy. That's very clearly something sketch.
Yeah, it's like that could have been someone's, you know, it, like worst comes to worst, you take it and you test it and it's one of the victims' DNA.
Yeah, but then at least you know.
You know. It's not like, oh, look, there's just some clothes with blood on it in the bathroom. Like, it could be, you know, it could be anything. It could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, as well as some of the investigators did not wear the Tyvek suits that prevent contamination, like those white suits with the footies, but the police chief said that basically it's not totally protocol that they have to wear them, and it's so they don't get contaminated. It's not so they don't contaminate the scene. So he's trying to make an excuse for not everyone wearing it, which they all should have been wearing it.
Yeah.
All right. So that's just some of the mishandling of evidence.
Some. Jesus.
Yeah. So during the trial, a store clerk testified that Guy was in the same store before he went home, like early dawn of the murders, and he didn't have any blood on him, and she said she saw nothing out of like the ordinary with him.
Okay.
So... And then one of Guy's friends and coworkers said during the trial, he never saw him act violent or weird behavior, and he really liked being around his family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of all the evidence that the prosecutors put up was pretty circumstantial. It was like a bloody fingerprint or palm print in the house. But, like, you have to remember, Guy lived there.
Yeah. So,
like, if there was, like, fingerprints and stuff from him, A, he went in and found his whole family member. He probably touched them. B, he lived there. So if there was a palm print or anything, it's because he lived there.
Yeah, which is kind of basic knowledge.
Yeah. So there's also issues with the jury.
Okay.
So during the jury deliberations, which lasted 2 days, there had to be a replacement for juror 152 because of their inability to reach a verdict which basically means that juror 152 was disagreeing with everybody on the guilty decision. So in order to reach a verdict, they removed him so they wouldn't have to go to mistrial and retry the case,
which is your constitutional right.
Yeah. So prosecutors asked the judge to remove him in exchange for removing him and replacing him. Prosecutors took the death penalty off the table.
Okay, so that's,
yeah, I don't see how any of this is legal.
Him being charged at all is wrong, but at least they took the death penalty off the table, which it still shouldn't be a conversation.
Because you might be going into mistrial, and I've heard some other things that juror 152 was saying, you know, some other things that got him removed, but basically a lot of the stuff I read, it's because he was refusing to say, to put in a guilty guilty verdict on his part, so they couldn't reach a verdict.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That just seems wrong that in exchange not to go to mistrial, they just should take the death penalty off the table and replace the juror.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So on October 25th, 2013, Guy Hines Jr. was found guilty on all counts and sentenced to life. So his little brother Tyler basically yelled, "What the fuck," in the courtroom. "This is so wrong," and got escorted out by bailiffs.
I would do the same.
Yeah. So in 2017, Guy's lawyers appealed his sentence and asked for a new trial. The reasons for this new trial, they decided that there was missing and mishandled evidence. They said the state threw out evidence, claimed the jury failed to follow instructions and did not understand the evidence, as well as they wanted Guy's lawyers to prove he was innocent instead of the prosecution proving he was guilty.
That's so it's basically constitutionally right.
Yeah, he's basically saying that they all went in with a notion that he was guilty, and unless they put up major evidence that he wasn't guilty, they were going to charge him guilty, not going in without being unbiased.
So fucked up. This is just so fucked up.
This appeal also claimed that Glynn County Police Chief Matt Doering conducted fingerprint evidence during the investigation, but there was no documentation of this during the trial. So it, went missing or was thrown away or not given to the prosecution.
Sketchy.
So it took 3 years for this appeal to go through, and on February 22nd, 2020, the judge denied Guy Hines a new trial. Which, I'd also like to point out that they early on tried to move, they wanted to move, this trial somewhere out of the little town, because it took 4 years to go to trial in the first place, and this was a sleepy port town. Nothing ever happened, so this was big news.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
The judge denying this trial to get moved in the first place allowed, when all the jurors came in anyways, they're all from this small area, they already have preconceived notions on this.
Yeah.
So, and then the judge not granting a new trial. So I hope they keep appealing, try to get this up to the federal level, because I feel like once this is up on the federal level or even the state level, state appeals level.
Yeah, we'll see how wrong the investigation was.
Exactly. So if you want more information on this case, I couldn't find it online for free, but there's an episode of BBC's Life and Death Row on it. More information. I only could watch part of it on YouTube, 4 minutes out of an hour. So besides that, my sources were CBS News, Florida Times Union, CBS 47, Action News, Jacksonville, ABC News, Murderpedia, and the Brunswick News.
Oh crap, I forgot to do my sources. Hold on.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, Unsolved Mysteries. Episode 2. I know one of the things I got off of Facebook. I used more tabs than that. Don't tell me just the one tab. I exited out of them. Checkersaga.com, Facebook. I think another one was, Facebook. I peeked at findcarry.blogspot.com and gbi.georgia.gov, which is the Georgia Bureau of Investigations.
So, which is also, they don't do a very good job either.
Yeah. But thanks for the info anyways.
Yeah.
Figure out this case. Figure out both these cases.
Yes, I think it's funny we both did Georgia.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so after this episode, we're going to have a few promos for some other podcasts. They're really great. You should check them out. And I'll throw the promos at the end of this episode.
Awesome.
Yeah, so
thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, thanks for listening. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CWATC Podcast.
Instagram, Coffee, Wine, and True Crime Podcast, and shoot us an email at coffeewineandtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. That's a really long email.
And don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcast if you are listening on that platform.
Yeah, and I guess if you're listening on another platform where you can leave reviews, I don't know if you can on Google.
I don't know about Spotify either. I don't think so.
Not on Spotify.
Okay.
I use Apple, so.
Oh, okay. I use Spotify.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have an Android, so I can't speak for Google.
Yeah, me neither.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all. We will actually be recording an episode next week, as far as we know.
Yeah.
It's at this moment. But, yeah. So we will see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Foilheads. This is Ash.
This is Kenzie.
This is Cole. And this is Dapper and the Dames.
A conspiracy theory podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole to discuss the theories that make you wonder what's really going on.
From lighthearted to heavy, we're bringing it all. Check us out on Instagram at DapperandTheDames_podcast, Facebook at DapperandTheDames, or our email, DapperandTheDamesPodcast@gmail.com.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Hello, everyone. I'm John, host of the new podcast, Hot Takes and Beer Breaks, where I'm joined by two of my best friends, Justin and Jason, to give our hottest takes on current events, entertainment, movies, and sports, all while going on wild tangents, making cheesy puns, and having a good laugh. Listen to us wherever you get your podcast and find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Hot Takes and Beer Breaks, where we have some hot takes, but more beer breaks.
Obsessed with UFOs and extraterrestrials?
Convinced there's a chupacabra in your backyard?
Is your doppelganger ruining your life?
Do you love all things haunting related?
If you answered yes to any,
or none of these,
then these are the mostly sensical, slightly drunken ramblings for you? ? I'm Emily.
And I'm Joel, and we're the host of Drink Drunk Dead. Join us,
our two cats, Emma and Otto, and our house ghost,
every week as we have a few drinks, discuss all things paranormal,
and raise a toast to our ghosts.
The world is a confusing, stressful, and often frightening place.
And we each have our own unique coping mechanisms that help us get by.
Some people will tell you that when life gives you lemons, you should make lemonade.
No, that's terrible advice. Just randomly getting free fruit is extremely suspicious. Haven't you heard of Snow White?
That's actually a really good point. It's usually not a great idea to consume anything if you're not totally sure what's in it.
If you're the type of person who copes with discomfort by making strange jokes and who enjoys losing yourself in a creepy and sometimes bloody mystery,
please join us for our dark comedy podcast, Studying Scarlet.
We alternate weekly between true crime and fictional crime, and we even take listener requests for episode topics.
So if you too have a morbid sense of humor, we'd love to welcome you into our weird, quirky, and sometimes disturbing world.
Studying Scarlet is available on your favorite podcast app, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
We can't wait to meet you.
Please subscribe today.